Support for this program is brought to you by listeners like you. Thank you.
The Local Thread.
Welcome to this edition of Toledo Works from the Toledo Free Press and WGTE Public Media. I'm Jaden Jefferson, a reporter covering politics and government for the Free Press. On today's episode, we're heading behind the kitchen door to check in on Toledo's restaurant scene, the challenges, potential optimism, and overall sentiment in the business right now. My first guest is Yezin Abu Udeya, owner of the food truck Baba's Eats. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having me today.
I just kind of want to first start out with how you got started, because we were having the conversation before the interview about the challenges that food truck owners face, because obviously you have those startup costs and that marketing. So how did you get into the business?
I got in at a weird time. It was a weird bubble. So I ran a junkyard for about 10 years, and I was also like in the process of setting up my wedding, and this was the end of 2019. My wedding date was the week COVID shut everything down. Everything. So we were supposed to get married in Florida. I had the money saved up to go towards the wedding. And then 2 days, 3 days before the wedding, they finally let me cancel and they refunded me. And that whole time during the COVID shutdown, I was still going to work, but I just wanted to try something new. I was a little burnout. I always loved food. I was like, maybe I'll do this. So I just started researching. I found a trailer that was in my cost range for the money I saved, and I had a discussion with my wife, and I was like, hey, I can save this much money by doing it up here. We could still get married. I'll still have the money for the wedding, but I can also open my own business. So what do you think? And she was fine with it. And so I purchased my trailer, and right before the bubble burst where everything just shot up. So like I was in a good cost range for the trailer. I had to do research because I had no idea. I had no background in food whatsoever. I was like sales and customer service. I just knew how to cook. So I went from there and I slowly just started building from there. So I started the trailer. I researched how to get my license. I researched how to do the tax stuff. And then I started researching prices on for my menu. And I just slowly like networked and found my way to where I'm at today.
And just looking at that timeline, a couple of the challenges that came to mind for me were, one, just the onset of the pandemic. But then, of course, you had that pandemic-caused inflation that resulted afterward. And so just to have those dual challenges happening at the same time, I guess what one was more difficult than the other?
It wasn't challenging because I'm mobile. So, like, I didn't have that issue where people couldn't come see me, especially where they open it up where you can be outside. So, like, I'm outside.
Right.
The other restaurants that had sit down were struggling a little more than I was because I can just park outside and people would come to me. And people were tired of being in the house at that point. So they're like, let's go out to eat. And it helped me. My issue was my cost basis originally. I had to keep changing my cost analysis for the food because the price just kept shooting up on me. It just kept skyrocketing. My chicken went from, I think, $30 a case to 100 something a case within 6 months to a year. Yeah, it was very crazy, the cost breakdown of what I was spending to just have my supplies.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, restaurants around the world experienced that because obviously those supply chain issues, it was so difficult to get things in after the pandemic. And so looking at the recovery from that, would you say things have improved or are they still a bit challenging in ways?
The supply chain has recovered. Like, I don't have a problem finding the items I need. The prices really haven't calmed down much, though. So we had to readjust, like, our price infrastructure for my menu to keep up with inflation. Otherwise, I would be losing every quarter, pretty much.
So how have customers responded to that? Because obviously people don't like when things get more expensive. That's one thing that's obvious. But have they been just supportive given that you are a local business? Because obviously there's a difference between paying more to local business versus a chain for some people.
They have been supportive. Some of my main menu items I kept the same price. And then as I added other menu items, those are the items that I had to adjust for inflation. So that way it evened out. So people can still get that balanced like price breakdown and still be affordable for some of the like lower priced items. And then if they wanted something more, that it would cover my costs.
Gotcha. And so looking at your operations today, what are some of the different things that you've been experimenting with, given now that it's been a few years since the COVID pandemic?
So my food is Middle Eastern based, but it's like Mexican fusion. So I do Middle Eastern food that is like tacos, quesadillas. In my original truck, the first trailer I had, I've upgraded since then. It was 6x12. So I only did tacos, really, and quesadillas. I had a side of hummus and chips. I did a shawarma taco that was chicken. I had a spicy chicken shawarma taco, a ranch chicken shawarma taco. And then I do a kofta taco, lamb and beef. Since then, my menu's about doubled. So I do more of a traditional sandwich now. I have a beef and chicken shawarma sandwich. I added a fryer to the new trailer because it's a lot bigger, so I do French fries. I'm planning on doing falafel this year as well. I had my original hummus and chips became a loaded item where I just make it into like a layer dip almost. So you get all the toppings that you would get on the taco and additional with the chips to eat. And then I've added like a salad. I've added loaded fries. And then this year I might do Middle Eastern fried pickles as like a loaded item where they would be the base.
So where would you say you derive the inspiration for your food? Is it just from personal experience, maybe growing up and enjoying those foods or finding love for those foods later in life? How did you come to find that exact mix?
So I have my family's immigrated from Palestine. My mother didn't really like taking us out to eat. So I ate at home almost like 6 days a week. I would get lucky once in a while. We'd go to McDonald's, you know, but I would always be in the kitchen with her because I love food. She's like, hey, try this. Make sure I had enough salt. So I learned from my mother everything I know for the most part. And as I grew up, I just continued cooking for myself. And especially like when I got to college, I started paying outside food prices. I was like, no, I'm going to cook my own food.
See, it came in handy down the road.
Yeah. So my friends would come over and we'd do like family dinners with my friends. And we started that as like a weekly thing. And they were like, man, we love your food. We love your food. And I was like, I just thought they were hyping me up. But then I was like, maybe I can do this. Let me try and do this and see how I do it. And actually, I've had really good feedback. And I think people like the food a lot. And they like the culture that I bring with it and the like traditions. And they also like the change and the fusion of like the new creative items that I sell.
So what would you say is the value in really representing that part of yourself in your business?
I feel like it shows like who I am as a person, like how I like to eat, how I like to represent myself, and my food like is just made with love and people enjoy it. It's not just something that is run of the day. Like you can go get a burger anywhere. Mine's like one of a kind for the area and for like a larger part of the country. So you're not going to find my chicken shawarma taco on anybody's menu in the city, you know?
Right. And definitely, you mentioned obviously that your family's from Palestine. Obviously, in the last few years, Palestine has been in the minds of a lot of different people in the country. And so how have you carried on and continued operating your business also at the same time as many people in Palestine are experiencing a lot of different challenges? What would you say has kind of been the thing that's kept you going?
When that all started happening, like around October, I was a little worried. I didn't know how it was going to affect the business. I also felt a little guilty because these people are starving and I'm advertising food every day. And it weighed heavy on my mind. But I still had to do what was best for me and my family here. So I tried to support by donating there more. My customers actually, they were all very open and like very accepting. And I actually got more support for it. Because I have a Palestinian flag on the side of my second truck. I have no shame in who I am or where I come from. And if you don't want to purchase from me, feel free to purchase somewhere else. No hard feelings, you know?
And that isn't new for you, right? Because obviously you've been representing your identity since you started this food truck.
Yeah. So it's not just since I started my food truck. It's been my whole life. People are like, where are you from? I'm like, Palestine. They're like, Pakistan? No, Palestine. And then I have to explain. And then I end up having to tell them it's like where Israel is now. And they kind of get it a little bit. But a lot of people haven't heard of it until recently. Like the last 3-4 years, more people know about Palestine than they have my entire life.
So would you say it's been easier to have those conversations over food rather than obviously in the direct way that we often see in many different other venues?
Yeah, it's actually always been easier. Like, hey, where's this food come from? Well, this is my mom's recipe for hummus. It's not specifically Palestinian, but this is the way the Palestinians make it. So it's easier to have that conversation. It opens up many doors to topics, and it changes the perspective of some people. When they talk to you, they don't know where you're from or who you are. And if you're talking to them and you're being genuine and nice and very respectful, and then they're like, oh, you're Palestinian, this isn't like the idea that we were given through the media of what you guys are or how you are represented. So like, I changed that representation with people, and I changed their perspective on the area a little bit, which I feel like is very important to me.
Yeah. And you and I were talking before the interview about some of the different relationships you have with other people in Toledo's restaurant community. What has that experience been like, just getting to know so many different people in this community and maybe also be able to share things that you've all learned?
I think, like, I already was very outgoing beforehand, and now, like, I feel like I know so many people in Toledo. I love it, though, because I'd be like, hey, I know that person from here. I know that person from there. And, like, even when I was sitting in your guys' waiting room, I looked over at the wall, and I worked for Dan Anderson a long time ago. And I was like, I recognize that face. So it's like, it's cool. So I'm always talking to people. My wife is a little introverted, just slightly. So, like, when I'm out in public and I have to talk to 20, 30 people, it bothers her a little bit.
Oh, I relate to that 100%. I mean, I will go out with friends and I'm talking to people and they're all just staring at me like, are you done? I get that 100%.
Who is he talking to now?
Right. Who is this? You know, this is the first time we're hearing of this person. Yeah. But that's also speaking to just the general small sense of community in Toledo, because Toledo is often described as like the smallest large city you'll ever be in, because the city itself is already small, but the business community and the people that go into the restaurant business in particular is a lot smaller of a community.
Yeah, I do really like that. So, like, I know so many people in town from different food trucks, from different restaurants, from, like, different suppliers. And then also from my original job when I was at the junkyard, I know, like, all the mechanics and car lots and stuff. So I just, that local community was already tight-knit. It expanded for me since I've started the food truck, and I feel like I can fit in anywhere across the city. And it does feel like a family atmosphere. Like, you can't go to one of the bigger cities and know everybody like we do here, you know?
Yeah. And also, on top of that, you've also kind of been learning along the way, too, because I think another thing about Toledoans is that they will take up an idea and they will just try to do all the research they can and get it as far as they can. You're one of those people who have just been self-taught. And so what has that experience been like, being self-taught?
So it's scary at first, but the more I do it, the easier it gets. So it's better to just try than it is to sit there and research and think and let it bother you. If you just go try and do it, if you don't do it right the first time, you can do it right the next time, but at least you're trying. So it doesn't matter, like, if you fail the first time. I was really worried that I was going to fail the first time. And, like, we did have problems that first night we opened. The way we wrapped our tacos was wrong. I forgot to send items out, you know?
Yeah.
But it wasn't negative. People didn't even really know that I messed up. And it was just all in my head. So the next time, you just try and do better. And every time you go out, you try and do better. And that's how you really should just live your life.
And it's very similar to, I think, how musicians think. I know a few musicians, and they will point out things that they've done wrong and all the errors they've made, and I will just see a very beautiful piece of music that they perform very well. So I think I see some parallels between those two things. And also just looking at your customers, which you've told me so far about your customers, it shows that they're willing, you know, to try new things, and they're willing to continue supporting a small business, because it seems that they recognize the struggles that come with being a small business owner, in 2026 especially.
So on the musician thing, yeah, I 100% know when I'm having a bad day, but my customers don't. They're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And I'm like, I'm struggling today. Like, I'm not sure. Like, I'm glad you like it, but I was worried you weren't. but yeah, that does happen all the time. My customer base is fantastic. Like, right now we're doing, for the last few years, Jute Mode has done that program, that Here for Good.
Right.
Where they give back to the local small businesses by posting the merchandise for free. And then we just split the profits at the end, really. And my customers have, since COVID, more than once bought my shirts and my sweatshirts. And I'll be walking through town and I'll just see my face on somebody's shirt. And I've never met them in my life. And it's crazy, you know?
Yeah.
So Toledo's nice about that. I've had people in Toledo will be like, hey, do you own Bubba's Eats? And I'm like, yeah, we love your truck. We had you here. And I've never even if I've met them, I meet millions of people at this point, like come to the truck every night, and I'm not always at the register. I'm back there cooking. So I don't know who comes and who goes. So it's like surprising and also impressive and cool to see people like supporting you that you've never met in your life.
Definitely. So what are some of the different ways that you've kind of engaged in outreach and really expanded your customer base?
I do different programs, and I do like a lot of my advertising through like social media for the most part, but it's word of mouth has been like my biggest thing. People try the food, they like the food, they ask for a business card, and they like relate it to their jobs or to families and friends for different events. I do like catering, I do graduations, weddings, I've done multiple like cool events, concerts, and a lot of it came from me just talking to people and feeding them. I didn't have to put in the money like the big companies to like to force the advertisement on somebody. I just let my product show what it was and who I am, and I got the business from it, which is nice.
Yeah.
A lot of it, there's like the groups on Facebook where they ask for food trucks, and I used to have to be there on there every day to try and get there, especially when I first opened. Like, hey, I'm available. Hey, I'm available. I would love to put my name there. Now, at one point last year, I could have been at 3 or 4 big events in one day, and I just didn't have the manpower or the food or the trailers to do it. And it's like, it's awesome. It is tough, but it's completely different, and the community's fantastic.
And from the sounds of it, the part that comes easy for you is just getting out there and being personable. That seems like that was the easy part for you, because for some small business owners, that's not something that comes naturally.
Yeah, I've always naturally been able to talk to people. Like, I didn't prepare for this at all. I just showed up today.
Hey, I love that.
But it's, I don't know, it's just something that it's always come to me naturally. Talking to people, like networking, and I'm always open to new things, new ideas, new like talks, communication with people. So
yeah. So what are some of the different parts of town that people normally find you at?
So in the summers, for the most part, there are a few set days that I have. It just depends on like application processes and stuff like that. So I've already applied for multiple events for the year. Some of the ones that I know I'll have will be downtown. I'll be downtown like Thursdays at Levis Square. That's a big one for the business lunch.
Yeah.
I'm waiting to hear back from like the Perrysburg Farmers Market. That's Thursday night. I do like the Toledo Farmers Market. I'm just still waiting to hear back on a lot of stuff. We already all started applying for these events like in January, and they're just starting to get back to us now. So I don't have set dates, but I travel to local, like to the local breweries. I am all over. I have like an hour radius almost. Yeah. Like, wow. I was talking to Red Rambler and Wasion today to schedule a date with them. So like I have a little bit of a travel time. But it's all in Northwest Ohio-ish. I don't have a Michigan license yet. I'm working on it. But mostly it is local to our area.
Definitely. And it's honestly something to think about this now, because that tells me that the warm months are coming. So yes. I'm looking forward to that. But I thank you very much for coming on the show and talking to us about Baba's Eats. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me on again. I appreciate being here to tell my story.
Thank you. And that's our first segment of Toledo Works. We have more coming up after this. Welcome back to Toledo Works from WDTE Public Media and the Toledo Free Press. I'm Jaden Jefferson. My next guest is Annika Kurtz. She's the corporate manager of Kengo Restaurants. Thanks for coming in on the show today. I just kind of want to first start out with a vibe check for the Toledo restaurant business. From your experience, how are things going right now?
So far, so good. We've had a lot of growth in the past 5 years, so it's never dull. I know it's never dull in the restaurant industry anyway, but it just feels it's you know, a little extra crazy, but nothing we can't handle, I guess.
Yeah, and we were just discussing with my previous guest the rebound from the COVID-19 pandemic, because that really hit restaurants the hardest, because that was kind of where people were spending their supplemental income, and obviously people pulled back during the pandemic. So where do things stand currently?
So it's really funny that you mentioned that, because COVID was the first time that Kengo chose to do takeout.
Really?
And there were cars lined up down the street. We had call ahead ordering. And he is so humble that he was not afraid to admit on the news, I totally failed miserably. It was an absolute zoo. It was so crazy, but it really spoke to the Toledo community and how they rallied together and they were so patient and they're like, no, it's fine. Keep going, keep going. So we were able to bounce back. We built three more restaurants kind of in the wake of COVID. So we did feel sort of the residual effects of the pricing going up on a lot of the equipment. So that was challenging, but interesting. But I feel like it's kind of full speed ahead. You know, it's really bouncing back to the way that it was before.
Yeah. So what would you say has been the reason that boost has happened? Has it just kind of been people returning to normal in terms of their everyday lives? Or have there also been maybe some macroeconomic things on happening behind the scenes?
You know, so they meaning, you know, just general society in general, has always thought that maybe Toledo was a test market for food.
Right.
So we've always had a very interesting relationship with food. We've had, you know, strong immigration here. A lot of people have built their businesses off of, you know, creating home-cooked meals for their loved ones, and then it morphs into,
right,
you know, restaurants. So I kind of feel like we're a little out of the ordinary when it comes to restaurants here in Toledo. Again, I haven't been in the industry long enough to know, you know, to truly, truly know. You know, I'm not some seasoned chef, but I'm really not sure what helped bounce it back. I feel like the community, you know, Toledo's community is just so willing to support local businesses that really helps. And also, I think people were just tired of being inside and being at home. So venturing out more probably helped, but I'm not really sure.
Well, and just talking about your story, how did you get into the restaurant business?
So I have a consulting company that I've had since 2008, and I've only helped lawyers. And I had no clients in Ohio. It was right after COVID. And my brother-in-law, Kengo, he wanted to open his childhood dream of a sushi restaurant, or I'm sorry, his childhood dream of opening a noodle shop. So he approached me and he said, hey, would you help me figure out an agreement between me and the guy I was going to consult with to help open the shop? I'm not an attorney, but at least I could help them draw paperwork in so he could take it to a lawyer. I was asking all these questions and doing a cost analysis, looking at the profit margins. And finally he said, well, you do realize what you just did, don't you? I said, let me guess, this other guy's job. And he goes, yes, why don't you do it? I said, I love you, brother. I'm sorry. I can't. I'm too scared. I don't want to disappoint you. This is your childhood dream. I don't want to ruin it. And he said, come on, you can do it. You can do it. So 2 weeks later, I said yes, and it changed the entire course of my life. It was the biggest blessing in disguise. I had no idea that it would have morphed into just, you know, three more restaurants and just a complete overhaul of life. It was amazing. So I kind of fell into it in a really serendipitous way, but I wouldn't change it for anything.
And what's interesting about that is just the dynamic, because it's so much different working with family versus working with people you may not know. So
absolutely.
How does being family change the workplace dynamic?
So I get that question a lot, actually, and I think it helps that my sister and I are so close, and so we're so used to seeing each other anyway, and so we've always had in our family just this hands-on, everybody helps mentality, and it wasn't, for instance, on the first day that Kengo did takeout, it was so backed up that he called my dad and I both, and he's like, can you guys come and help and like deliver food. I mean, we've never delivered food in our lives, right? So that it's just kind of that feeling in our family. So it was, I mean, there were definitely some times where we disagreed, but I think since we always have the common goal of just giving really good service to good people in our community, that we never differ on that. So it's always just a matter of, okay, let's figure out the logistics. We don't always agree on the logistics of things, but we still always want to come to good, loving, like solutions, I guess. So the guest is always the forefront of everything. So.
Yeah. And looking at that perspective there, because obviously you're working on the business side, Chef Kengo is working on the front facing side, mm-hmm, of actually preparing the food, providing people with meals. Kind of, what are some of the things you learn from each other in that sense? Because I know a lot of creatives, you know, they're not really business minded in the first place. They're more so about their craft. But obviously, there always has to be that person who's looking at numbers and looking at ways to grow the business, right?
Right. So Papa is, we call him Papa Kato. It's Kengo's dad. He lives here now from in Toledo from Japan. And he told me one time, he goes, Annika, Kengo is artiste, you businessman. So he hit the nail on the head that, you know, my brain works numbers wise. Kengo's is, you know, just this creative, just service minded. I can't even wrap my head around the thoughts that go.
That's true of a lot of creatives. I mean, yeah. You can't even explain it because they have it all in their head.
Right. So I feel like I've learned from him different ways to think about things. Everything doesn't have to be so black and white and numbers
right.
and, you know, data driven. And I think he's learned from me that it is important, of course, to give everybody the best food that money can buy. You know, if your recipe calls for the best ingredients, absolutely 100%. But it is still important to know how that everything breaks down, like what your labor costs are, what your food costs are. And so it's really neat to see that paying attention to the numbers can yield an even better experience for the guest, you know? And that is what, like I said, that's always what drives us. But it's just really neat to watch the creative and the numbers meld together in a cool way, in a good way.
And there's certainly a process when that happens because it can sometimes take time. And what's the thing about the restaurant industry is that you're constantly having to do that because situations change just throughout the year. And so kind of how often do you go back and you're looking at the numbers and saying, okay, how are we doing this quarter? What should we do next quarter? How often are you checking in on that side of things?
So I can't really speak to how it was done before I came on board. March 30th, it'll have been 5 years. So I can't believe how much time has passed. I feel like I kind of bug him every single day with like, hey, just letting you know, here's how we did last night here. And he has an app on his phone where he's constantly checking it too. But we do check in at the very least once a month, like actually looking at all the numbers. But every single day, it's always, hey, you know, what do you think about this? Or, hey, let's put this on our calendar for a week from now. Or, hey, you know, we're going with this new supplier. How's it working out? So it does help that we see each other every single day and that my sister, even though my sister isn't in the restaurant every single day, I still see her all the time. So I think that constant communication between us that can only really come from family is what our check-ins have like morphed into, you know?
Right. So and nice. Obviously you're now working in restaurants. And so it's so different, you know, coming from the legal world.
Yeah.
And so what were some of the biggest differences between those two worlds? And was that shocking to you in a way? Or was it kind of just, I'm jumping into something new. Let's see how it goes.
I think the biggest thing that was surprising for me was how scared I was at first to go into the restaurant industry, because I thought that it was so completely different. And I thought that there's no way that I could learn this. There's no way. And Kengo said that very first day that he asked if I would do it, he said, look, you've already figured out the hardest part, like referring to the data. You've already figured out the hardest part. I can teach you the rest. And I just didn't believe him. You know, I really didn't. I didn't believe him. And I was so terrified of not being able to understand, and that inability to understand would affect my family. So I was very, very scared. And it was so refreshing as I started learning more and more and more that it really isn't that different. I mean, because at the end of the day, we're both in, like, whether you're a lawyer or whether you're a restaurant owner, you're in the service industry, right? You want to give the best experience to your guest, but you also have to make sure that whether that experience is 45 minutes in a ramen shop, or if it's an hour in a sushi place, or if it's 9 months long as your case progresses, you're still... Every step, every moment that they are interacting with your business, it's important. Like it has to be on it every single time. Kengo gifted to me a book, the hardcover book of one that I had listened to back when I was heavily involved with all the legal world. It's called Unreasonable Hospitality. And reading it was like the third time that I read it, but reading it in what I'm doing now, while I'm doing this now, versus when I listened to it.
A different context.
It is. But all of the core things are the same, right? And it was really neat to see that. And kind of like a big relief too, you know?
Yeah. And being in the service industry means you're all often having to meet people where they are.
Yes.
And obviously having to go beyond your means in some cases to do that.
Yes.
And so what are some of the biggest challenges that come with being in the service industry?
I feel like it's helping the guest, especially in the dealing with Asian cuisine and dealing with sushi, where people are very intimidated by it. You know, they really want to try it because everybody says everything, you know, it's so great, it's so great. But they're also, you know, they're not really sure what it's going to taste like.
There's so many options and they get overwhelmed. I've been there.
Right. So I think I don't want to say it's a challenge, but I think that it's really important to be cognizant of it, that you have to make the guest feel like if they're spending their time and their money and their effort to leave the comfort of their own home, you want the experience to be as close to their own home as possible. So we're welcoming you into our home, right? We want to greet you the same way. We want you to feel like, you know, you can put your elbows on the table. You don't have to, you know, straighten your tie. You don't have to be prim and proper. We just want you to feel like you would at your own dinner table. Right. And we also want you to not only taste how good the food feels or taste like how good it tastes, but also we want you to feel all that love and effort that we put into it. And we also spend, you know, a lot of people say this, but you spend more time with the people that you work with than you do your own family, right? And we treat each other like family, you know? So when people come to our restaurants, they are really sitting down at our family dinner. So we just, I don't know, I think so. That is a challenge, of course, but I think it's one that we really do a good job at because we care, you know, and we want it to be that way.
And would you say it makes a difference being locally owned and being locally based? Because local business owners have a stake in their own community.
Oh, for sure.
Whereas ones that aren't based in a community, there really isn't much that they have to be concerned about.
Absolutely. And I do feel like, and again, I haven't worked at a large restaurant corporation, but I imagine that it's really data driven. And all of the decisions are strictly tied to that. If you can, you know, work in some magic or you can work in some hospitality, of course, I'm sure that that's great. But I think with us, it's all of our employees, you know, our number one concern. We want to make sure that we're succeeding so that they have a place to go to work, that they have their paychecks, so that they have, you know, a community outside of their own homes. So that is important to us. But I don't know. I just feel like it's also helpful that all of our restaurants are right there on South St. Clair. So there is a little community within our community too, that you wouldn't get if we had a location down in Tampa or LA or Chicago or whatever. And then you're having to go to these corporate meetings where everybody congregates in one city. You know, it's just different. It's different.
Yeah. And obviously one part of your story has been writing a book. And so kind of talk to us about how you got to the point where you wanted to do that and take that up.
So I think it started, I've always wanted to write a book, and I've been picking one up and putting it down for, you know, 5 years, but it was just so, the way that I fell into this was so unorthodox that people were like, wait, so now a lot of people were like, oh, so you're a waitress now? Are you working as a waitress? You know, and which is fine with them. That's fine with me. But it was I think it was born out of so many people asking how that journey came about, like what that transition looked like. And then also I still have it. It's a hardcover book. It's about 4 inches thick, and it's just a notebook. And I call it the Bible. And it is every single note and thought and question and appointment and name of, I mean, it was every single thing having to do with opening up the ramen shop. And you can see from in the beginning, there's so many question marks. And I'm like, oh, you know, people to know, or people, or terms to learn, or how to calculate a BTU, you know, all these things. And then Hollywood Casino approached Kango about opening a sushi concept inside there. We went through all the contract negotiations. All of those notes are in there. And then it's opening Papakado's Japanese fried chicken. All those notes are in there. But if you flip through the pages, you can see that I'm learning more and learning more and learning more and becoming more confident. So I think that was sort of the catalyst for it. But then I went through a breakup, and I was like, you know, we were supposed to go on this hella skiing trip, and I was like, you know what? I could either sit around and cry about it, or I can get my money back on this trip and I can book a 2-week solo trip to Europe to finish this book by myself. And so that's what I did. I gave myself the gift of traveling alone with no plan in mind other than finishing the book. And it morphed into this whole, I mean, I was kind of worried because I had all of my note cards, everything organized perfectly to talk about the rest, to write about the, finish writing about the restaurant. And then I didn't even pick them up while I was there. I just wrote about everything that was going on around me. And it was just this healing, wonderful, magical 2 weeks. And that would have never come about had Kengo not asked me to open the restaurant, had this, you know, guy not broken my heart, you know, my heart wouldn't have been broken. So all of these things I was so scared of, I mean, terrified of and, you know, embarrassed about or whatever, all my vulnerabilities, the book came from that, you know? And so it turned into this magical trip where I had all of these realizations like, oh my gosh, you know, had the bad not happened, then I wouldn't have this. So the book is really just born out of that, I guess. You know, I just had these stories kind of flowing out and it was, yeah, just worked out.
See, and that's such a consistent theme, I think, throughout your story is just having that spontaneous ability to just change and just adjust with the times and pivot. I mean, a lot of us have had to do that. And I think that's also going to be a consistent theme throughout this episode, because when you're talking to folks in the restaurant industry, that's something that's constantly happening.
Yeah. And everybody who comes in the door has their own story and their own tastes and their own thing that they're trying to learn about. And so we're not just selling, you know, like one flavor of ice cream. You know, and it's just neat to listen to people's stories and figure out what their why is and their not fear, but, you know, I think everything is driven from fear, right? Good and bad things are driven from fear. And so it's learning about them and like, and I don't know, but that's why I called the book Herd. Herd is a common phrase in the restaurant. Like, you know, if chef's like, oh, we're out of this, herd, okay. But it's also, you know, the first time that I chose to hear myself, right? And I think that that's at the core of the legal world, the core of restaurants, the core of any service industry. It's just, if you're able to hear your guest, then the rest is easy.
And you know where to meet them.
Yeah.
Well, Annika Kurt, corporate manager at Kengo's Restaurants, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
I'm Jaden Jefferson, and Toledo Works continues after this. Welcome back to Toledo Works here on WGTE. I'm Jaden Jefferson. My next guest is Ray Ora, who's a barista at House of Coffee in downtown Toledo. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I just kind of want to first start out with House of Coffee because this is a newer spot in downtown Toledo. So kind of talk to folks about, you know, how you got involved and what the experience is like. I've been there before, so I'm going to keep my mouth shut, but I'm going to let you speak to the experience.
Absolutely. Yeah, of course. I got hired back in January and the company's really only been open since August. That's when our grand opening was. We opened back in May, but I've been in coffee forever now. I think that was my first job going into the workforce. So being a barista has been a big part of my life. And so being able to go into a local coffee shop has been definitely the change I needed when it came to making coffee. House of Coffee, the experience, I would explain it as a very elegant but also calm vibe. When you walk in, you feel welcomed right away. There's a kids area, so people who even have kids are welcome to sit down and be able to catch up with their friends, which is not really common. You see, you know, for Starbucks or other local coffee shops, there's a student vibe, whereas here at House of Coffee, we are welcoming everybody.
Right. And local coffee shops definitely are something that they can be those communal spaces where maybe you're studying, maybe you're just hanging out with friends. And I think that in recent years, we've kind of seen a growth in a number of local coffee shops.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what would you say has been the reason for that, where people are seeking out more community spaces?
I think the just beverage and drink niche has grown so much as time has gone on, especially with matcha or just different sweets too. But with House of Coffee, they do it differently, whereas we're not just doing drinks, we're doing food at the same time. We're taking in mind that people are coming here to get a drink, but they're also sitting down for a long time, and eventually you're going to get hungry and you don't want to leave that same place you're in. You're comfortable, you're already in the zone, and we have a full menu for accommodating to that. And I think that's what makes it different than other coffee shops. Whereas they're all focused on drinks, we are focused on the entirety of it all.
And you mentioned that coffee has been a big part of your life professionally. So kind of to make that switch from, you know, maybe another coffee shop to House of Coffee, what have been some of the changes you've experienced personally?
It's slower in the best way possible. Being able to connect with people on a different level, whereas at Starbucks, where I was for 2 years, I was in a rush at all times, whereas time was the goal to get people out as soon as possible. Here, I'm able to connect with my teammates a lot more, with the customers a lot more, and really just focus on making a good drink. And that's really important to me because coffee is an art, and yeah. I take it seriously.
So what are some of your favorite drinks to make? Because I'm kind of fascinated by this topic in general because,
yeah.
I mean, you have so many options. And so
right. Kind
of what are some of the things that stick out to you?
I'm a fan of the hot latte. There's a lot of precision and technical skills that go into it where the amount of time you aerate the milk can determine whether it's going to be a cappuccino or a latte. So really, you know, the syrups also matter too. And we have very light syrups, which I like because the espresso would speak for itself. I'm a latte girl, always will. And it's just, it really does speak for the amount of talent a barista can have or will have depending on how they do their lattes.
And there's a skill that's involved
absolutely.
That people don't often see.
Yes, absolutely. There's the timing, the dialing of the espresso, how much an espresso shot's going to weigh in is all extremely important.
So how often do you run into fellow coffee aficionados at House of Coffee?
I feel like often people who come into local coffee shops aren't looking to get a coffee and leave. They want to have a real specialty coffee, and that's what we are. If someone wanted to get a coffee and, you know, just have it for the caffeine, you could go anywhere else. But people come in with the intention of having a good coffee that sets it apart from other places.
Definitely. And I think that there also is just that rush that people experience at a lot of different other places.
Absolutely.
Because it's just the nature of business in the U.S. where it's constantly pushing people around to do other things.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously slowing things down allows for that community space. And
absolutely.
So what's been the value in that?
Really just connecting with people on a different level. I see the regulars constantly that come in, and being able to remember their drinks really can make someone's day. I know I remember Erin's, for example. She gets a skim milk cappuccino very often, and being able to be like, hey, how's it going? And connecting every single interaction has led me to make more friends, meaningful connections, even with my teammates, and being able to share that. How can we make these experiences better for these people that are coming in almost every day?
What would you say is the response to regulars when they just know that there's kind of that relationship, regulars like Erin?
The response is, it's nice. It's, you can see the smile on their faces. You can see them kind of light up when you remember their name. And it's a simple thing. People think it's simple, but it does go a long way.
Yeah, and definitely I think people are seeking that out more because obviously social media in an odd way was kind of meant to connect us, but at the same time, it kind of feels like it's isolated us. Would you say that's kind of been one of the drivers, if not the only driver, for why people are kind of seeking more interpersonal experiences?
Absolutely. I think the world today moves really fast, especially
yeah.
with social media. It's meant to move fast nowadays, whereas, yes, it was like MySpace and all that kind of
yeah.
good stuff. It was meant to connect, but now people are seeking out meaningful connections in person, and through that, through local businesses and supporting our community. And I think that is the most meaningful, like being a part of that is super meaningful to me.
Yeah, MySpace, so innocent. And then now there's Facebook and it's just like AI slop. I mean,
it's
we've come
everywhere.
A long way. It's a regression.
Absolutely.
But I think Toledo's a unique place for this because mm-hmm. I think we were mentioning in our last interview that Toledo's kind of this, you know, city that's, it's a large city, but it's mm-hmm. also small in that you know people and you
absolutely.
Will run into the same people frequently. So how would you say you experienced that in your day today?
Being actually working in downtown Toledo and away from the fray of fast businesses has honestly, I feel like, increased my humanity in a way. You mentioned AI, whereas it's taking over a lot of things. Working so close to people in a downtown space has, I feel like, really connected me, really grounded me. Toledo is known for its arts. I feel like even if it has that industrial aspect to it, I feel like that in itself is an art, and the way we've taken advantage over it throughout our local businesses, throughout like in the art museum.
Right.
It's just such a good thing to have a connection to, and I'm very grateful for it.
Yeah, and looking at the downtown part of our city, because that's definitely where a lot of just, you know, industry has just come up over the past
absolutely.
Few decades. And it's changed in a way, right? Because
yes.
decades ago, it was maybe manufacturing, right? But now you see more diversity in what businesses are downtown.
100%.
And so looking at downtown's growth today, would you say that small businesses are kind of complementing each other in that way and being close and driving consumers around?
100%. I used to play violin in the Toledo Symphony, and I used to play when... Downtown wasn't a cool place to like drive through. It was just like, oh, there's buildings everywhere and they're all, you know, falling apart. They're cold and everything's a little bit gray. But as time has gone on, small businesses have genuinely lit up the area and they are good at complementing each other. There's a bunch of coffee shops, but there isn't one where I'd be like, yeah, I'd rather go here than there. I want to visit all of them. And I think that's a vibe that a lot of people have maintained.
Yeah, and definitely young professionals on top of that, where they're definitely able to find out about a lot of spaces. And I guess this goes back to social media. I guess that's one of the positives is
Absolutely.
That local businesses have been able to connect with their customer base. Mm-hmm. And so in what ways has social media been a tool for you guys?
Being able to just share what we do and farther than just coffee, right? Our experiences, what we do different and how we set ourselves apart from all these bigger businesses or other small businesses in the area makes people more excited to come out more and support them a lot more too. So yeah, it's just finding those differences, being able to set ourselves apart via social media is the most important part.
Right. And obviously the seasons change, the coffee changes as
Absolutely.
Well. And so seasonally, there tends to be that adjustment at local coffee shops.
Yes.
And so we're getting to the spring season. What are some of the different tastes of customers that they have in a spring season versus, say, the fall or winter?
You're getting a lot more cooler drinks. People who are looking for something refreshing, they're coming out of exams or about to, you know, graduate even or get done with the semester. People want to be refreshed. And we're working on a spring menu right now. I'm really excited to share it and release it with people and be part of that. So being able to share these drinks that are matching the vibe, like, hey, we're about to get out of school. The spring is coming. The summer is coming. Let's be ready for it. And being able to prepare those drinks, whereas the winter is like, we want comfort. We want to be warm. And it's a little bit sad and cold outside.
Yes.
So what's going to make me feel warm? Whereas the summer and spring drinks are just exciting. They're bright.
And I've never really understood the process of how that menu comes together. So kind of walk us through how you decide what flavors are in and which flavors are out.
Absolutely. I have the pleasure of working with so many very talented baristas. And we as a team just start brainstorming. What sounds good? What have customers made, you know, in their own orders that sounded good that we can incorporate in our menus? Because we are inspired by our community. And so being able to bounce ideas off each other and do little taste shots of these drinks that we have in mind is so fun. And that's really all the process is. And getting approval from our boss, of course. And he's very open to our ideas. He's very supportive. And having that as well really adds the personalization of our drinks and our menu.
So that customer responsiveness and feedback is a big part of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I make an effort to go around, if it's not busy, to ask people how they're enjoying their food, anything they could change, anything they could do with their drinks that they would have changed. And being able to get that feedback and reflect it in our work is very important.
So how much would you say just the customer is the root of the ideas that you guys have?
I would say it's a good 50-50 on the team and the customer basis. There's drinks that we'll make that are not super popular and we'll ask them why and they'll give us that feedback and we'll improve on it next time.
Yeah. And looking at the day to day, obviously working at a coffee shop is working on it as a team. And so how do you kind of balance that dynamic of obviously working as a team and of course also pleasing customers?
Of course. Yeah. So my job as an opener is to come in and to prep the team for anything that really we're going to face during a rush. And so we usually have two people on staff. It's a good time. I'm usually in the front. I like being the barista. And of course, our kitchen crew is amazing. They have to go through a lot, too. But by the time that rush comes in and your teammates are all rolled in, we're all ready to go, it's nonstop. And being able to multitask and really be able to connect and have that customer serving face is very important. And it's all about the flow of your team. If you can get along and communicate well with your teammates and coworkers, it makes the biggest difference in the world.
And there is that dual responsibility because at House of Coffee, you guys do both beverages and food.
Right.
And so what kind of set makes that different rather than just being a coffee shop?
It's being able to understand where our roles are. So if we're assigned that day as a barista or as a cashier or a floater, chef, we have to be there and be able to communicate when any of us need to leave our areas. And with that, that makes that smooth, makes that rush able to communicate with customers well and just have that smile on your face as you're working because things are going smoothly. Now, don't get me wrong, there's going to be hiccups. And that's probably the most difficult part of being a barista is knowing how to overcome those hiccups during a rush. Because at that point, it's a very crucial tipping fine line kind of thing of how your rest of your shift's going to go, unfortunately. But I think I'm very grateful for the team I have because we are good at recovering. I've spilled many drinks in the middle of a rush, I will say, and it's the most devastating thing, but we're able to recover really fast.
And as a customer, when I've spilled my drink, it also is devastating.
It's
devastating all around.
100%.
Yeah. And so being able to have that knowledge and that experience working in a variety of different roles, would you say that's kind of been beneficial, just kind of being prepared for anything?
Absolutely. I used to work in retail. I've worked in Starbucks, where things are automatically fast from the moment you step in that door to the moment you walk out, all the way up to close. And being able to have that experience has helped a lot, especially in a slower environment like a local coffee shop. I'm ready and I'm able to help someone, for example, who isn't as experienced as me, kind of guide them, keep them calm and collected as we go on.
Yeah, and we kind of talk about local coffee shops as these community spaces. What would you say is the larger role that they play in any community of any size?
The amount of people that come to connect, the differences that people have. I will look around sometimes above my little barista station and see how many people are sitting down, different people at that. There's people who are doing, you know, groups for their friends and making cards together, or vision boards for 2026 is a popular thing in our coffee shop. There's friends getting back together. There's people with instruments. There's the Coast Guard that comes in every so often, I think every Saturday, who gets their coffee and desserts and their sweets. And it's a good time seeing all the different people and how much our community holds, like, diversity, and they all come together to get coffee.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good way to start everyone's day, honestly.
So would you say then that that is the way to go out and meet people in Toledo? Because I often, you know, I'll look at the different social media pages in Toledo, and people that are new to the community, they're thinking about, how can I meet new people? How can I get out? From the sounds of it, coffee shops are a great way of doing that.
Absolutely. If you have the confidence to go up and talk to people and actually get to know them and listen, you can build some really good, meaningful relationships. Even outside of the coffee shop I work at, I like to visit other coffee shops, and being able to connect with their baristas, I've made really good friends over these past few years just by talking to them, and now they've learned my name, what I'm doing for, you know, my career and what I want to do in the future. It's such a meaningful way and fun way to connect with people. You just got to be able to put yourself out there.
Yeah. And in our interviews prior, we were kind of discussing how when you're working in the restaurant business, and I think this is true of coffee shops too, you're kind of learning along the way.
Absolutely.
I mean, a lot of lessons come from that. So what would you say personally have been some things that you've derived from your time working at House of Coffee?
Being able to stay calm under pressure, teammate, like just communicating with people. I think that going in, when I started off as a 17-year-old barista, I didn't realize how big communication was until we started making mistakes, and those mistakes could have been avoided. And using those mistakes to learn and rebuild and become the teammate that I am now for my coworkers only makes you better. And I think it makes you a leader at some point. If you learn to learn from your mistakes and communicate with your team as to what you could do better, that is a skill in its own.
Would you say that Toledoans are uniquely supportive in their support for local businesses? Because in some communities, there maybe is a big local business community, and others, it's maybe not a big part of life in that city. How would you say Toledo ranks in terms of support for local businesses?
I think as of recently, their support for local businesses has grown so much. There's so many groups out there that are advocating for these businesses, want to put them out there. And I think it's a beautiful thing to see, especially people who will come in and ask, hey, this is our group, how can we promote you guys? We want to be able to help. And it's fun. I think Toledo easily ranks, what, 9 out of 10, top 10, easily for supporting local businesses.
Yeah. So what do you think the future looks like? Because I think a few years back, we were kind of having this conversation about this downtown renaissance, and mm-hmm. there was a lot of excitement around that. And you see that things are still happening. In some ways, it's kind of focusing now on neighborhoods. But what do you think the future overall looks like for small business development in our city?
I think it's looking bright. I hope it continues to keep growing and we continue to help each other all the time, because that's what Toledo is good at, helping each other. And if we continue to do that, we will continue to grow and become a very beautiful city outside of the, you know, 10, 15 years ago where it was gray and industrial. We will come bright and still have that charm to us.
I feel like there was this John Denver song that people refer to quite often about Toledo. It wasn't a positive, glowing review, wasn't the best Yelp review, but obviously our local businesses, though, they get plenty of good Yelp
Absolutely.
Reviews.
Yes, 100%. I am very proud to be working in the downtown Toledo area, or Toledo just in general, and being a part of these local businesses, it makes a difference in you, and you're making a difference in the community as well.
Yeah, and I think Toledoans also kind of had to learn, too, you don't have to attract corporations. You don't have to attract large employers. cities that have done that, in some cases, they regret it. But if you have locally owned businesses, everyone kind of has a stake in what happens.
Absolutely.
Versus when they're not based here.
100%. I agree. The people, the cities that have these bigger corporations, it's great to have when you're, you know, wanting to get a piece of food or whatever quick, but it's not going to ever have that love or care that a drink from a local coffee house or a, you know, ramen from another ramen house locally. It's just, you're never going to get that care in a fast food business or anything that's big and corporate. I am very, very glad that we're stepping away from that, I think, as a society.
Yeah, because I think we have a lot to be proud of.
Absolutely.
Well, Ray Ora, barista at House of Coffee, thanks for coming in and talking coffee, one of my favorite things in the world. I appreciate
it. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And that is all for this edition of Toledo Works. I'm Jaden Jefferson. Thanks for listening. And remember, you can find the show online at WGTE.org/ToledoWorks. We'll see you next time.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.
The views and opinions expressed in The Local Thread are those of the hosts of the program and its guests. They do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WGTE Public Media.